On the board here behind me, I've drawn a line, and we're going to call this the timeline of life. All right. This little bambino here was me, day one, first day on planet Earth. That was where it all began, this fascinating journey of life, and this is where it's all going to end. That's meant to be a coffin, by the way, with RIP. Rest in peace, Cain Ramsey. That's where I'm heading. Now, this is a truth. This isn't a belief, or an opinion, or a feeling, or a thought. Now, I can think what I want about this. I can feel how I want about this. I could be scared, apprehensive, anxious, nervous, excited. But it doesn't matter what I think, or how I feel, or what I believe, or what my opinion is about death. This does not change its inevitability. And what's true for me is true for you also. So, it's important for us to understand that all we ever have in life is right here, right now. You don't have yesterday, you don't have a year ago, you don't have 2 years ago, because yesterday is history. Tomorrow is an absolute mystery. In fact, if you think about it, you don't even know whether you're going to wake up tomorrow morning or not. This is not something that you're able to control or determine. Remember that only the thing that you are able to control and determine in life is how it is that you choose to respond or react to the circumstances and the situations that we find ourselves in life. And the one situation that we all find ourselves in life, the one circumstance that's universal for all of us, is that we're all here right now. Now, we might not be here in 20 nows from now, but we are here right now. We're not all listening to me speak right now, that's just you. Right now. But if you think about it, as I say now, that now is now in the past. And the now that I haven't said yet is in the future. Now. But now that now is in the past. So all we ever have, really, is now. Now. Right here, right now. And if you think about it, if we go back to emotional time travel in the last section, we looked at where it is that most people spend their time in life. Many people will look back to the past, at the memories, good, some bad, and the memories that people have that are good, if they focus on them, they'll feel happy or joyous, or they might even feel sad as they compare the better days that have gone to where they're at today in life. Some people will feel sad about their upbringings, about whether they were loved in the way that they wanted to be loved, whether they were accepted. And what happens to us in past life kind of determines the foundations and the beliefs that we develop about ourselves here, now. All right? Now, the interesting thing is about beliefs is that who we believe we are here and now determines the expectations that we have about what to expect in our futures. Alright, so say for example, someone's past, their history, has been riddled with failure and rejection and hurt and suffering and pain and all this negative stuff. Guess what they're naturally going to expect in the future? That's right, you guessed it. Hurt, rejection, pain, suffering, distress, chaos, all these kinds of things. So people will naturally reflect into the future's expectations that mirror what they've already experienced in their past. And all of this is going to be determined by the beliefs they've developed about themselves and about how the world is. So that gives us the broad overview. Let me now break this down and show you exactly how the beliefs that we have about ourselves are formed. Because we're all born as clean slates, aren't we? Clean slates, little bambinos, so innocent, so pure, until we start growing up. Because if you think about it, when we're brought into this world, we don't have anything, do we? We don't have any memories, we don't have any stories, we're not able to speak, all we can do is cry, make some noise, mess ourselves, and hope that someone hears. But whether someone hears or whether someone doesn't, and then whether someone responds to us is going to determine the stories that we start telling ourselves about who it is that we fundamentally are. So here, what I would like to do now is just share with you what I, in later years of my life, have discovered to be the formation of the beliefs that I developed about myself at an earlier stage in life. And it's a set of beliefs that didn't serve me in the healthiest of ways. Now, it was actually through using an NLP model through an old mentor that I had going back quite a number of years ago that helped me to understand these beliefs. Now, it wasn't that the model or the exercise was mystical or magic in any way. It was more just through his self-disclosure. He told me stories about himself that enabled me to relate back to some of the earlier events that I'd had in life, that I told myself some stories that went on to develop some untrue beliefs. Remember the elephant story a few videos back, where the elephant learned the limitations that it had as a child, but then took those limitations forward with it throughout life that pretty much just acted as a noose around the elephant's neck. Well, our beliefs have the potential to do exactly the same thing, and this was very much true for me. I'm sure that it's going to be true for you in some area of your life. So going back to around about the age of 5 or 6 years old, this was actually the first real memory that I have. And this took me back to walking into my parents' bedroom, and my dad was in bed at the time. Now, going back then, my dad used to work away from home quite a lot, Monday to Friday. Sometimes he'd even stay away on weekends. Now, in Scotland, the men are manly, and sometimes the women can be a little bit manlier. And the role of the man, common cultural belief, is to provide for his family. Now, I do appreciate today, and you know, today's modern man, that's very often not the case. But back then, the man would be the provider. So, for many men, the role of provision was kind of the end of responsibility. So, as long as a man was bringing in money, well, that was it. That was his role as a father, kind of done, wrapped up. So from my dad's perspective, this was very much the case. Yes, he would work to bring in the money, to pay the bills, to keep the roof over our head and meet our basic core physiological needs. But the needs that we had on any other level, as you know, as his children, or even my mother as his wife, in his eyes were kind of irrelevant. You see, my dad focused most of his time, his energy and his efforts onto working and generating money. So this unfortunately came at the cost of the time that he was otherwise willing to spend with us, his family. Now, this isn't a sob story, I'm just explaining and setting the context for the formation of the beliefs that I developed as a child. You see, this day, as I went into my dad's bedroom, being a young boy, full of energy, full of life and full of beans, I would have been saying something to him along the lines of, "Dad, Dad, get out of bed, come and take me to the park, play with me, give me some attention," as kids do. And I guess what you might say was myself and even my sister probably would have grown up through life being quite, have been referred to as perhaps attention seekers, because we didn't get too much attention in the family home. My dad worked away all the time, so on weekends this was my time to spend time with my dad, my father figure, role model. But unfortunately he didn't want to. This day in particular, as I was jumping up and down, clambering for his attention, his response was, he rolled over, turned his back on me, and farted. He bumped, he popped off, he broke wind. And back then, this was the first time that I'd ever really experienced rejection on this level. I didn't know what it meant. So, being the persistent young man that I was, I carried on and I persevered. "Dad, Dad, Dad, get out of bed, spend some time with me, take me to the park." And after a few more minutes of my perseverance, he then turned over and he shouted at me. He said, "Kane, get out of my room, leave me alone, I'm trying to sleep, I've got a sore head and I've got a sore back," and that was it. And this was pretty much the essence of my childhood. In relation to spending time with my father, he always had a sore head or a sore back or an ailment or an illness or a sickness that meant that he was unable to spend time with me and my sister. Now, from this day here, we had two similar events. They were both rejections of me, but I just hadn't figured out what this meant yet. I just hadn't come up with a conclusion. So, what I had learned that day was that it was bad to want to spend time with Dad, all right? It was important that I didn't pester him. If Dad had a sore back or something like that, I just had to leave him be. If he was available, I just had to leave him alone. And that was the story that I went on to tell myself. It wasn't okay for me to want to spend time with Dad. So I went to school, and now I'm around about the age of 7 years old, and it's rather than looking to my dad for attention, I was looking to other people. I'm looking to my social peers. At 7 years old, I'd noticed girls for the first time. Girls are prettier than boys. And there was one little girl in particular who'd caught my attention. Her name was Sandra Ning. Sandra, if you're watching this right now, you were my childhood sweetheart, right? My first love, all that kind of thing. And Sandra's mum and dad were the owners of the local Chinese takeaway. So there was no selfish agenda here at all. A guarantee, a promise. But that year, what I'd done, it was Valentine's Day, and I'd saved up all my pocket money, all my pennies, to buy a Valentine's card and a Mars bar to present to Sandra Ning. So I'd left school on my lunch break, and I'd gone down to the local corner shop, bought the Valentine's card and the Mars bar, wrapped them up, got down on one knee and presented them to Sandra. Those were my offerings. Sandra, will you be my Valentine? And you know what she said? Nah, you stink. And that was it. From her perspective, I was just a smelly boy. I couldn't believe it. I was heartbroken. And what I'm now beginning to identify is a bit of a pattern, a bit of a trend. People don't want to spend time with me. Why? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Why don't these people who I'm interested in and who I care about want to spend time with me? What's wrong with me? I hate being rejected. I hate it because they're not giving me any good reason. They're telling me to get away. They're telling me to go. They're telling me no, but they're not telling me why. I don't know. So at the age of 7 years old, I've got to start coming up with conclusions about why it is that I'm not good enough for them. And this is how our beliefs are formed. So, I then get older. I'm now 8 years old, and in Scotland, one way of being accepted as part of the cool gang, which incidentally everyone wants to be part of the cool gang, don't they, is through being good at football. But unfortunately, because my dad could never be bothered to get his arse out of bed and play football with me, I never got taught. I never learned how to play football. And because I never learned how to play football, I wasn't particularly good at it. Because same as all skills, skills are developed over time and through practice, which I'd never had. I'd never been bought football. So when it came to getting picked for the school team, guess who the last person to be standing in line was? That's right, you guessed it, it was me. I was always picked last. And see, when the guys picked me, do you know where they'd put me? They'd put me in goals, and they would say something along the lines of, Kane, just go in goals and try not to let too many balls in. And that was it. But here I'm now, seeing a pattern, and I'm starting to come to conclusions. You know, my dad, he doesn't want to spend time with me. Sandra Ning, she's not interested in me. I'm always the last person to get picked for the football team. It's got nothing to do with them. It's to do with me. It's got everything to do with who I am. I'm not good enough. What I'm hoping to have painted the picture of now is how it is we can grow to develop beliefs about who we are. And just because we develop a belief about who we are doesn't mean that the belief is accurate or even that it's true. You see, our beliefs do form the foundation that we build and base our lives upon. So if we now can connect back to the emotional time travel thing that was going on, because I've had all these rejections in the past, right, how confident do you think I ever was to ask out girls in the future, to join social groups or teams, to study subjects or take exams? Well, the answer is that I never wanted to do any of these things, so I was always less inclined to take risks and pursue the things that I really wanted to pursue. I would never even think about asking out the girl. Why? Because I'd been rejected so many times in the past. I never wanted to study new things or take exams. Why? Because in the past, I'd failed so many. I didn't want to join social groups or clubs. I never got involved in any sports at all growing up. Why? Because I was always the last to get picked. I'd grown to fundamentally believe that who I was wasn't good enough. And this became the noose around my neck in similarity to that of the elephants. It wasn't rope. It wasn't the chain. Many people in life believe that the greatest prisons in life are those made of concrete and reinforcement and cast iron bars and steels and toughened glass. But what I can guarantee you right now is that the greatest prison that keeps human beings enslaved, tied to the past, is the beliefs that they develop about who it is that they fundamentally are. So what I'm saying here is that if our beliefs aren't accurate, if the people that come to you for life coaching on into the future, if their beliefs aren't accurate and true, then they will be acting as nothing more than a noose around their neck that's preventing them from pursuing the goals that they have and the vision that they have for a better future. And it's your role as a life coach to help them understand exactly what these beliefs are. So I'm hoping that all of this makes sense to you on some level. I'm hoping that you're able to relate the story that I've shared with you to your own life experience. Bear in mind, my life experience is going to be different from yours, and yours is going to be different from theirs. It's only our experiences in life and the stories that we tell ourselves from these experiences that differentiate us as human beings. And this is what makes humanity such a fascinating race. You see, if we can make it our number one priority and goal to seek understanding before all other things, then guess what? We're gonna win people's hearts. Because most people are so used to being negatively and incorrectly and unfairly judged that it's gonna seem and feel like such a phenomenal thing to have someone that just unconditionally accepts them. Because if you can become good at understanding yourself, and therefore then in turn, unconditionally accepting other people. Now, I'm not necessarily talking about unconditionally accepting people's behaviours and actions, because sometimes they're going to be destructive, offensive, and completely disrespectful. But there's a big difference between accepting someone for who they are and accepting someone's actions and behaviours. Because whilst there are people that I'll interact with, some people that I'll enter and be in relationships with, whilst I always am unconditionally accepting of them, their actions and behaviours, if they fall below the standard, well, I'm going to reject the actions and behaviours. And this is a phenomenal insight that we can build into our practice as life coaches. This helps us to put effective boundaries in place in relation to what it is that we're willing to accept and tolerate from other people. Because bear in mind, other people in life are going to bring you all their stuff, all their baggage, all their hurts, all their highs and all their lows that they've experienced throughout the years. And it's your role as a life coach to look between the lines and find that place of equilibrium and balance to establish, okay, it's going to be very, very easy to judge this person based upon what they're saying and how they're being, but if I judge them, then I'm not going to win their heart, and therefore they're then not going to give me their mind. And if they don't give you their mind, then you're never going to have any degree of positive influence over them. So, if all this makes sense, then you're going to look forward to what I'm going to share with you in the next video, which is actually a series of questions that I'm going to urge you to take and use right away on someone that you know, love and trust, and someone that also knows, loves and trusts you, to help you to get to the root of establishing exactly what the limiting beliefs are that other people have in their lives that may have potentially been holding them back for a lifetime. So I'll look forward to sharing this with you in the next video, and I hope that you've found all of this insightful in some way.